My guest in the studio tonight has been playing the drums professionally since he was 13 years old. In the late 1980s, he studied at the New South Wales Conservatorium of Music, where he's now a lecturer in jazz drums. In 1992, he was the only non-American artist in the finals of the Thelonious Monk Institute Jazz Drumming Competition. Since then, he's performed with virtually every leading Australian jazz artist and a host of visiting international artists, including Johnny Griffin, Warren Vache, Mark Murphy, and Martin Taylor. And the list goes on and on and on. He's now released what could be one of the greatest hard bop albums this country has produced. Andrew Dickerson, welcome to Now's the Time.
Thanks very much for having me.
Andrew, the obvious question is, why did it take so long to record as a leader?
I think for me, because being a sideman for so long, I'd done so many albums with a huge variety of people. I think there's maybe getting close to 100 albums out there now. I knew I had to do something different. It couldn't be someone else's band under my name. It had to be something that sort of had my fingerprint on it. So it was a matter of finding having a direction in my own mind that I wanted the band to sound like, something we could follow, and then finding the people to do it as well. And the teachers I had in America, I studied for a long time with Art Taylor, especially. I used to watch Arthur's band rehearse, so I knew, I sort of had an inkling of how to get a band together and to, how to run a tight ship, so to speak. But to find the confidence and the sort of to be at a level where you can actually do that, it's another story. So for me, it sort of all came together at this time, felt like the right time to do it. And the band existed in my mind before it actually happened. Like, I knew that Roger was going to be in there. First time I heard Eamon, I felt like he was the right guy. Talking Roger Mannins and Eamon McNellis. And Alex Bonham on the bass and Steve Barry were both students of mine at the Con, who were great young musicians. So all the people came together at the right time. And it's sort of, up until that point, there wasn't really that magic combination that I actually wanted to put a band together under my own name using. Probably I'd done gigs, which was just a matter of calling the best players in town and roping them all in for a night. But this was actually a band that had to exist as a band and have its own sound and its own direction.
Well, I saw the group at last year's Wangaratta Festival of Jazz. Eamon was the ultimate winner of the Jazz Awards. And it almost seems like you'd picked a winner, certainly on a...
Yeah, well, I knew I had, not in an arrogant sort of way, but you couldn't really go wrong with those guys. And up to that point, we'd done a few gigs prior to that. We'd done, I think, 4 or 5 days in a row at the Threadbow Festival the year before and a couple of little bits and pieces. But you sort of get, I got the feeling from all of those guys that I knew it was going to work when they were together, and it was just like I knew it was going to feel. And they're all, you listen to those guys and they're remarkably talented. Eamon can play, he's one of those guys who can play anything. I mean, the first time I heard him, he was with the Melbourne band called Virus, doing Louis Armstrong and King Oliver tunes, totally authentically, but sounding like himself. And the next day I heard him at Wangaratta playing, sort of post-bop Woody Shaw-style trumpet equally well and with his own sound. He's just one of those natural people. Roger, the same thing. Roger can play anything. And the whole band of guys that are really, they're into self-expression, they know all the right things to play, but there's a lot of personality comes out of all those people. Well, in my opinion anyway, a lot of personality comes out of those guys. So yeah, by the time you heard us at Wang, we'd played a bit together. And
what were you looking for in a bass player with Alex Bunner? Because to me, I mean, he's just all over the bass.
Yeah.
And a wonderful driving Scott LaFaro type sound.
Mm. Yeah, Alex, well, I mean, Alex first came to my attention at the Con. Well, he's left now, so that'd be probably 6 or 7 years ago. I've been around long enough that when someone special's come along, and he was like that right from the start. He sounded great. It was obviously he was talented and really open to direction. Like, he wanted to learn and he wanted to get better. And all those things you said are true. He can get all over the bass, but he doesn't, which is what I like.
Yes.
He's a team player. He plays for the band and he's open-minded. You'll hear him. He plays in all sorts of situations around town. You hear him with the Vampires playing that sort of music, but you hear him with my band and he's appropriate for whatever gig comes along. Really strong player. Yeah, he's happy to play with the drums. Not all bass players do that. So, and big sound, big sound that had to fill out. When you got horn players like Eamon and Rog, you need a big foundation underneath that to make it work. And he's always there, and he's not afraid to put his bit in. There's great bass players out there who sort of sit in the background and do a good job, but Alex is actually, he's got some personality, so he'll throw his bit into the mix, which keeps life interesting,
Steve Barry, the piano player. Now, he's from New Zealand.
Steve's from Auckland originally. Been in Sydney for a couple of years now. Same story. I heard him at the Con. This is, I guess, just over 2 years ago. He played at a rhythm section workshop that I do there. as part of the course, and I didn't know who he was. So, and I heard him, and I straight off assumed that he wasn't a student because he sounded that good then.
Yes.
Like, remarkably talented. And same thing, and he's really, in the last couple of years, he's become flavour of the month a little bit in Sydney, and he hasn't let it go to his head. And he's really, he would have been, I guess, maybe not even 20 when I first heard him, and really, really talented, not mature at that stage, but way beyond his years. And since then, he's matured. Really, he's really matured musically and as a guy as well. Really open-minded. And like Alex, yeah, he plays in a whole bunch of situations. He's creative. He's got his own sound and style sort of coming along already. I mean, I look forward to hearing him in 5 years. You know, down the track, he'd really be something else. But he's an exciting player. I mean, for me, there's no one who can touch him in his own age group, and probably not too many guys older than him either. He's got a real freshness to what he does. I mean, often I've used James Muller on the guitar in place of Rog when Rog can't get over here.
Yep.
The reason for that is he's another musician on that level like Roger is. I mean, James is absolutely phenomenal.
He is.
Just, you know, what can you say? I mean, anyone who's heard him knows that. But to me, he brings the same flavour as Rog to the band. It's like real creativity, can play anything on the guitar.
Your style as a drummer, it really comes straight out of the hard bop school of drummers of the 1950s, but it wasn't always the case. You were the original drummer in our great avant-garde group, Clarion Fracture Zone.
Mm.
How would you describe, Andrew, how would you describe your journey of discernment to get to the sound of the jazz that you like to play, which really at the core is the swing?
Yeah, I mean, that's always been what I liked. It's just early on in the piece, I fell in with great musicians like Sandy. I played in Roger Frampton's group, Mark Knox's group, and it never felt particularly avant-garde to me. It was just, this is some more music to make with different people. Listening back to it, I was buying stereo equipment last week at Len Wallace Hi-Fi, and the Clarion Fracture Zone track came on. Must have been a digital ABC DigiJazz or something. And I was like, wow, that's a lot sort of more out there than I remembered. But for me, it's always just about, I don't really think my style's changed at all. It's just that I've always been able to, I've tried to fit in with what the music around me sort of asked me to do. And more these days, I mean, I did find myself, I almost trapped myself for a while there into being, it was a bit too sort of textbook hard bop, whatever, post bop, whatever you want to call it. And now, I mean, the whole thing with me now is just self-expression. So I'd like to think now it's a lot more open than it used to be, and it can sort of go anywhere. But yeah, for me, I like to swing. That's what I enjoy doing. I'm good at it. And yeah, whatever I play is going to have a hint or a lot of that in there, but plus whatever else the music requires. And for sure now, especially the last 4 or 5 years, I've been studying in New York with a great teacher called Michael Carvin. And the whole point of studying with Michael was to open up my playing and to free it and to make it sound more like Andrew Dickerson, as opposed to make it sound like, you know, textbook jazz drummer number 50 million on the planet or something like that. So, and that's where it is for me at the moment. Okay. That has been a journey. And the teaching at the Con has been interesting, but also in some ways dangerous for me. The amount of study I've done, you can study yourself into a hole. Like, too much knowledge isn't always a good thing. And by that I mean, you know, I transcribed millions of records. I could sing you every great hard bop solo off every album possible. And it's easy to lose yourself in that. And for me, you know, after all the study and all the collecting, you know, walls full of albums and all that stuff, it was time to get back to, you know, what I actually had to say. And that's another reason this album's only happened now, because, you know, to put out your own album that you believe in, for me, actually I had to have something to say that was Andrew Dickerson, not just here's some good drumming or here's some interesting music. So that's sort of been the journey for me. Mm. Last few years have been a really fascinating journey, drum-wise, you know, the stuff I've done overseas. The study I've done overseas, it's been quite fascinating.
The Billy Strayhorn piece, Isfahan. Well, tell us a little bit about this particular piece. It features Eamon on the trumpet.
Yeah, the feeling behind this album, as the title sort of suggested, I had the title before I had the repertoire even, and I wanted to create some sort of mood, hence the name Weaver of Dreams. And not just record like a jam session album of a bunch of guys blowing. So every tune I wanted to be some sort of journey, and, you know, without being esoteric and all of that sort of stuff, it should feel like it was some sort of adventure for us. And the album's got that feeling of a live gig, but hopefully it's not. There's long tracks, but hopefully not long-winded. And so there's two ballads on there where I featured Roger and Eamon. So this features Eamon. It's from the Far East suite that Duke Ellington recorded. Tune called Isfahan.
Andrew, I don't expect this to be an easy question for you, having performed with so many greats of jazz. But releasing your own album as leader aside, what's been the highlight of your career?
It's not an easy one. Oh, I'd have to say early days working with Johnny Griffin was phenomenal. Probably wasn't prepared for it.
Tell us about that. That was during his one or two tours to Australia, was it?
That was in 92, I think. So I just got back from quite a bit of time in New York, and I'd been studying at that stage with Fennell Fournier and Art Taylor. So Arthur had sort of groomed me a little bit for Johnny Griffin because they went back decades. And I've got recordings of those gigs that were made, and it sounds good. Yeah. But just to be around someone like that. And he took me aside one night at the basement after the final gig with a fairly large amount of cognac, and we sat in a corner and he talked drums for hours until the sort of wee small hours of the morning. And that was fascinating. Yeah, just he talked about what he liked to hear from the drums, what he wanted, what other people might want. That sort of thing. That was a highlight. Junior Cook, same thing. I mean, there's so many people I've been so lucky, you know. Yeah, working with Mark Murphy at his peak in the early 90s was phenomenal. Andy Bay was a real revelation to me because I hadn't really heard of Andy Bay, and he's since become probably my favourite singer or one of them. Recent years, I worked with Kirk Lightsey in the 90s. Again, I definitely wasn't prepared for that one. But we recorded and toured with Bernie McGann and Brendan Clarke and myself and Kirk year before last, and really had a great time on that. Yeah, the whole band played up to the level of Kirk, and that was really exciting. It was just an amazing experience, and that's going to be out on Rufus as well.
Now, when you say you weren't prepared, I mean, these are years now that you quite easily look back on where you are in your career now and say, well, I wasn't prepared. But essentially, you're a pretty good drummer. Otherwise, you wouldn't have been up there on stage with these people.
I enjoyed it, and they were very appreciative. But I guess, I mean, I'm sort of one of those people that I'm constantly striving to get better and improving, and as you mature as a musician, you sort of see the holes and it becomes easier to fill them. So the way I'm playing now is a lot more complete than it was back then. Didn't sound bad back then, and probably maybe I'm the only person who noticed, but when you're on the bandstand with someone on the level of Johnny Griffin, and you know his heritage and you know his history and what he's done, I guess for me, because I knew that music really well, I didn't feel inadequate, and I did the best I possibly could, but I'd love to do it again now. Like, I wish he was here this week, because, you know, you start to, like we were talking about before, I sort of sounds like me now.
Yes.
To me anyway, you know, I feel like I've actually got something to say now, or I know what I've got to say and I can say it on the drums, and it'd be nice to bring that to the bandstand with some other great people, you know.
Yeah, you've honed your skill and you've developed that sound that...
Well, now it feels like actually, I mean, maybe you got to just get older and live a bit before when you're 19, you don't really... I didn't have a whole lot to play, to draw upon to play, you know. It was all playing silly buggers at uni and everything. But now, I guess you draw on your life experience and you try to put that through your instrument when you play, and you try to reach the listeners. And you, for me, I've worked out why I want to play now. Yeah, back then, it was just I played and tried to do the best job I could. I play for a different reason now, which is interesting, you know. You bring that to the bandstand. It's fun.
I've always said that when you're supporting a good singer, as a sideman playing the drums, your drumming sort of makes that singer sound great rather than just good, simply by your ability to shape the song. You give the song a storyline, you create the tension, and then provide the climax. How do you learn to be a good sideman to a singer?
You listen to singers. I mean, I listen to singers probably more than I listen to instrumentalists.
Is that right?
Yeah, I'm singer mad. Yeah, I think I've got everything Billie Holiday recorded, everything Sarah Vaughan recorded, Frank, Ella. I love it. I absolutely love it. And knowing the words is super important, because then you're much less likely to play something that's inappropriate. I find that with students I teach at the con, the ones that take the time to learn the words to tunes, you can do just what you said. You can shape it. You're not going to put the wrong thing in the wrong place if you know the sentiment of the tune. And that carries through to when you're playing tunes that were songs originally with an instrumental band. If you know the contour of it and the shape of it, and you can sing it, you're more likely to, you play sympathetically to the song, and you sound like you're playing the song rather than just, bashing out the drums behind it all. But yeah, I'm singer crazy. I mean, this week there's a new Ella Fitzgerald CD and DVD just being released by the BBC that's absolutely phenomenal. So that's sort of morning till midnight of Ella this week. But yeah, I can't get enough singers, it's beautiful.
Who were the Australian jazz drummers that you used to check out when you were coming up?
Mm-hmm. My favourite drummer still in Australia is Lynn Wallace. He used to play with the Unity Hall band. Lynn's in Melbourne now. Like, Lynn knocks me out every time I hear him. He's a phenomenal character, and that character comes straight through on the drums. In Sydney, Mike Murphy was a big hero of mine, a big influence. maybe not a lot of listeners are familiar with Mike. He passed away a few years ago. Now, he lived in New York for a long time, played with some great players there. Still very respected there. Whenever I'm in New York, people talk about him. And he was into the real sort of Art Blakey, hard bop, Philly Joe school of drums. He was a big influence on me. Alan Turnbull I used to follow all over town. If I wasn't working, I'd be there sort of sitting right next to the drums. And Alan was a big inspiration to me. He'd always slide me onto the drums, mid-tune usually. It didn't matter where, it didn't matter if it was the Don Burrow Supper Club behind Don. He'd sneak me in there, and next thing you know, I was at the bar and I'm on the drums. And he took the time to, he'd pull me aside and say, hey, what you're doing sounds good. You might want to try this. You might want to try that. He really cared. He really cared for me. He threw me a lot of gigs. Threw me in the deep end a lot of times. He probably thought I was ready or I knew the experience. But he provided that mentoring thing. John Poche was the same, I followed John around a lot. But they were those sort of musical father figures that were around back then. And it's difficult. I had that mentoring thing. Everyone I played with when I was young was better than me. There were drummers around that I followed. And that was a great mentoring experience, because you'd always find yourself on the bandstand or always find yourself listening to guys that were much older, much more experienced. And they take the time out to help you because they recognize some talent. And I guess that's because there were a lot more gigs. If we're talking like late 80s through to the 90s, there was a lot more gigs. So you could go and hear Alan Turnbull five nights a week, or Mike Murphy and those guys. But it was a big pool of inspiration, Alan Brown I like a lot. Alan's a great drummer. There's plenty around him, and I'm inspired by some of the young guys around the place as well. Now that, guys that were former students of mine. There's a good energy on the drum scene around at the moment. People are taking it different directions, which is the right thing. It's 21st century now, so there's a lot of interesting stuff going on.
You mentioned the possibility of touring the group.
Yeah, what I'd like to do would be do sort of reasonably substantial tour, maybe record again sometime in the future, although I'm not really sure what the next project's. I'm still recovering from this one.
Is this the type of group that you'll be inviting the various band members to contribute original tunes to?
Yeah, I've written some tunes. I mean, a lot of the guys lead their own band, so if there's tunes of theirs that I like, we'll do them. I was quite happy with this album to stick to that sort of standard repertoire. Like, I'm a singer nut, so you've got Ill Wind on there, you've got Weaver of Dreams, those great standard tunes. I'm happy to have those songs in there. Probably if I did an album with originals, they'd maybe be more likely to be mine, and we'll see what happens with the guys' ones as well. Not that they're not writing great stuff, but it's sort of my project, so probably I'd write for the next one. If people want to hear a bit more, they can listen to check it out at my website. That's andrewdickerson.com. Have a listen there. Please leave me feedback. Drop me a line. You can buy it there if you're that way inclined. Have a listen and keep in touch.
Well, thanks very much for joining us in the studio tonight.
Thanks very much for having me. I appreciate it.